This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News, covering Gardner and the towns of Ashburnham, Hubbardston, Petersham, Templeton, Westminster, and Winchendon. This program is sponsored in part by the Lions Clubs of Ashburnham, Petersham, and Winchendon. And thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we will be bringing you news from the Gardner News, covering the week of May 7th through May 13th. This is Dave Russell reading with Risa Sachs. Our first story, Graham Street fire cause undetermined, what fire officials suspect. This is written by Stephen Landry. The official cause of the three-alarm fire that heavily damaged the residence at 45 Graham Street in Gardner on Tuesday, May 5th, will remain undetermined, but investigators said the blaze was likely due to improper disposal of smoking materials. Investigators from the Massachusetts District 8 Fire Investigation Unit and troopers assigned to the State Fire Marshal's Fire and Explosion Investigation Unit were on the scene of the three-alarm fire that was initially reported just after 12:30 p.m. The three-family residence sustained heavy fire damage to the second and third floors, with smoke and water damage throughout the building, according to Gardner Fire Chief Greg Lagoy. The first crews on the scene could see heavy flames erupting from the roof of the three-story multifamily dwelling, but all occupants were out of the building by the time initial responders arrived. Two cats remain unaccounted for. A neighbor across the street noticed smoke coming from the second floor and alerted the occupants. Black smoke rising from the scene could be seen from Route 2. There were no reports of any injuries to occupants or firefighters. Officials with the Red Cross were on the scene to offer assistance to residents. Among the other departments responding to the blaze were crews from Ashburnham, Hubbardston, Templeton, Westminster, Athol, Fitchburg, and Leominster. Station coverage was provided by crews from Rutland, Stirling, and Devons. The last of the fire units cleared the scene at 5 p.m., according to Lagoy. Our next story, Haywood Hospital's new helipad will improve emergency care. This is written by Stephen Landry. The Life Flight Air Ambulance Service will soon have a new primary designated landing site in Gardner. Officials at Haywood Hospital have announced that the facility's helipad, which was initiated to strengthen emergency preparedness, patient access, and regional health care capabilities, is almost ready to receive on-site helicopter landings. After being located at Mount Wachusett for many years, Life Flight relocated its landing zone from Mount Wachusett Community College to the Gardner Municipal Airport in 2025. Ross Wiener, Haywood's Director of Facilities, Engineering, and Public Safety, said the need for a dedicated helipad had become increasingly evident as the hospital and regional emergency services evaluated ways to improve response times and streamline critical patient transfers. Having an on-site landing area eliminates the need for additional ground ambulance transfers between the hospital and off-site landing zones, saving valuable time during emergencies, he said. For patients experiencing severe trauma, stroke, cardiac emergencies, or other critical conditions, every minute matters. The helipad will strengthen the hospital's ability to provide timely access to specialized treatment centers when advanced care is needed. Life Flight Services have historically utilized designating landing sites such as Mount Wachusett Community College and the Gardner Municipal Airport, but Wiener said the hospital's helipad, which is located behind the facility, is expected to become the primary landing location when operationally appropriate for patients being transported directly to or from Haywood Hospital. However, alternative landing zones may still be utilized depending on weather conditions, aircraft needs, operational circumstances, or regional emergency demands, he said. The plan to establish a helipad at the hospital has been long in development, according to Weiner, who said the process had involved coordination with state agencies, aviation officials, emergency responders, and healthcare leadership. Residents could expect to see periodic training exercises and coordination drills involving life flight crews, local first responders, and hospital staff, Weiner said. These exercises are important to ensure safe operations, efficient patient transfers, and strong communication among all emergency response partners, he said. Every effort will be made to minimize disruption to the surrounding community during these trainings. Weiner said he expects that when the helipad became operational, helicopter activity at the hospital to be intermittent and limited to emergency medical operations. During active use, there may be temporary traffic interruptions near the landing area to ensure patient, staff, and public safety, he said. These closures are expected to be brief and coordinated closely with the Haywood Public Safety and Emergency Room personnel. Hospital officials said the helipad should be operational within a few weeks. It is expected to become active following final policy approvals, completion of the readiness activities, and coordination with our emergency response partners, Weiner said. We anticipate providing a formal operational date once all inspections and certifications are complete. Now we turn to another type of treatment. Mental Wellness Center opens at Mount Wachusett Community College. This is written by Dave DeMille, an AI-assisted reporter. Mount Wachusett Community College marked a new chapter in student support May 6th with the dedication of its Mental Wellness Center, an initiative made possible through an endowment from Dr. John and Annette Zivos, according to a community announcement. The center will support expanded mental wellness programming and fund an annual speaker series focused on mental health and wellness for students, faculty, and staff at Mount Wachusett Community College. During the ceremony, Jason Zaleski, Vice President of Student Services and Dean of Students, said access to mental health resources is essential at community colleges, where many students balance academics with work, family responsibilities, and financial pressures. Mental health support is not a luxury at a community college. It is a necessity, Zaleski said, according to the announcement. He said counseling services, peer support programs, and accessible wellness resources help students stay enrolled, complete their programs, and build resilience beyond the classroom. Zaleski also recognized the work of Wellness Outreach Coordinator Lauren Clifford and Senior Mental Health Counselor Dr. Leanne Hadsel, noting that the Zivos family's gift allows mental health services at the college to continue expanding. Dr. John Zivos reflected on the importance of mental wellness and personal growth, referencing psychologist William James and the idea that individuals can change their lives by changing their mindset. The encouraging truth is that our minds, thoughts, and attitudes are malleable and not fixed. They're capable of growth and change, Zivos said. He described the Mental Wellness Center as a place where students can build resilience and explore new possibilities with professional support. The center offers many open doors, and students are empowered to choose the one they wish to open, he said. Hadsel said the endowment will have a lasting impact on the campus community by allowing the college to expand inclusive and responsive wellness initiatives. Their contribution will create space where students feel seen, supported, and empowered to engage in help-seeking, building coping skills, and foster a sense of belonging, Hatzell said, according to the announcement. The dedication underscores MWCC's broader effort to support students holistically and maintain accessible, proactive mental health resources across campus. This story from Templeton, what to know about Crows on the Commons' new menu and hours. This is written by Stephen Landry. Get ready for some big changes to the menu at Crows on the Common. The owners of the popular Templeton Eatery, Karen Osterberg and Terry Fougere, said they have decided by customer demand to shift to serving lunch and dinner starting Thursday, May 21st. You asked, we listened, said Osterberg. Our guests have always loved and asked for more of our dinners, so we're bringing you more of what you love. With the new menu, which will be posted soon, comes updated hours for the restaurant at 10 Baldwinville Road. Starting May 21st, Crows will be open Thursday through Sunday from 11:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m., with prime rib every Saturday starting at 5 p.m. Osterberg said she is excited about the change. We've had several guests comment over the years on our popular pop-up dinners and how we should do them more often, and they always sell out. Well, I'm ready for the challenge, she said. It's also time to change things up. There's only so much you can do with eggs. The change was partly due to economics, Osterberg added. We're finding that customers are not using their disposable income on breakfast. They're saving it for special occasions like date night, friends getting together, and even just takeout when they don't want to cook, she said. Our new menu will have something for everyone, including vegetarian, vegan, and gluten-free options. No reservations will be required, Osterberg added, and online and phone takeout would be available. Crows on the Common will serve its last breakfast on Saturday, May 16th, then be closed the next day for a private event. The owners recently put the restaurant on the market. The restaurant will operate with normal business hours while it is for sale. Osterberg said that when she and her husband first opened the restaurant in 2020, they had agreed that the endeavor would be a 10-year project. The two-story, 7,464-square-foot property sits on 2.5 acres and is listed at nearly $1.6 million by Channing Real Estate. The building, which was once the Elsa Stone House and a private school, has a storied history in the community, dating back to 1770. It served for a time as the Templeton Town Hall. More recently, the building was home to the popular Country Mischief Store, which was owned by Gail and Glenn Whittle for more than 3 decades. In addition to housing a restaurant with a full liquor license and catering business, the property is a residence. The second floor includes 4 bedrooms, a spacious living and dining area, kitchen, and bath. Our next story, fill your garden with plants from Monty Tech's student-run greenhouse. This is written by Amelia Cardona. Behind the Monty Tech School building in Fitchburg, the annual student-run greenhouse is open for the spring, offering a variety of annual plants and garden decor. The residents from the greater Gardner area can buy a variety of hanging flowers and plants, as well as vegetable starters and bird baths. The greenhouse is open Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. 4-inch pots of plants and flowers cost $3 each, and hanging baskets of flowers or plants cost $25 each. All money collected from the greenhouse goes back to the Business Technology Program to fund field trips and shop projects within the department. Abby Law, a Monty Tech 2023 grad, is one of the adult volunteers who help manage the greenhouse. The school staff buys all the supplies, like the hanging plants, and the students are in charge of potting plants, customer service, and managing the money, she said. My older sister actually ran the greenhouse back in 2020, and now I am. Business technology students at Monty Tech are in charge of organizing inventory, handling money, and providing customer service. Law said all the garden masonry sculptures for sale are made by Monty Tech students, from the birdbaths to the benches and gnomes. She said the money collected from masonry sales is used so the students can create more sculptures. The Monty Tech greenhouse is open 5 days a week, Monday to Friday, until Friday, May 29th. The greenhouse will be closed on Monday, May 25th, for Memorial Day. This is Community News from Gardner. It's a weekly production of the Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Now Risa Sachs joins us. She has more Gardner news for you. Risa?
Thank you, Dave. And we'll begin this segment of this evening's program with a story about local young talent. Mount Wachusett Community College hosts 40th art exhibition. It's a staff report from the Gardner News. Mount Wachusett Community College recently held its 40th annual regional exhibition of high school art, featuring works from students at 8 area high schools. The exhibition, which took place in the college's East Wing Gallery, displayed a variety of 2- and 3-dimensional pieces, including ceramics, paintings, drawings, and mixed media, according to a community announcement. Participating schools included Athol High School, Contoocook Valley Regional High School, Fitchburg High School, Leominster High School, Quabbin Regional High School, Ralph C. Mehar Regional High School, Shepherd Hill Regional High School, and Wachusett Regional High School. The exhibition has been a staple event for the college, celebrating the creativity and dedication of young artists in the region. This exhibition is one of our most popular and meaningful community events. Joyce Miller, MWCC's Art Department Chair and Gallery Director, said, according to the announcement. For 40 years, it has provided an opportunity to celebrate the work of high school students and recognize the dedication of their teachers, families, and supporters. Art program expanding. The art department at MWCC is expanding with increased enrollment driven by free community college initiatives. The program offers an associate degree in art, as well as a liberal arts and sciences degree with an art concentration. It also provides internships, portfolio development courses, and active student engagement through exhibitions and an art club. The degree programs have seen strong transfer success, with recent graduates accepted to institutions such as Massachusetts College of Art and Design, UMass Amherst, Montserrat College of Art, Parsons School of Design, and Pratt Institute. Supporting the community. The department also plays an active role in the community through initiatives such as its Summer Art Youth Program, which is entering its 31st year. Additionally, it offers free public exhibitions, gallery talks, and collaborations with early college programs. During the exhibition's award ceremony, 10 students received cash awards for outstanding artistic achievement. Their works were evaluated based on originality, technical skills, and creative expression. Exhibit highlights. Award winners included Aiden Maroney, Conval Regional High School, Wheel Thrown Ceramic Bottle. Lucy Morris, Convan Regional High School, Ceramic Lidded Vessel. Aaron Sargent, Leominster High School, Narrative Watercolor Illustration. Bryn Dumphy, Quabbin Regional High School, Geometric Assemblage Wall Piece. Ramel Rami, Shepherd Hill Regional High School, Still Life Painting. Eliza Winjango, Shepherd Hill Regional High School, Collage of Grizzly Bear and Salmon. Julia Daly, Wachusett Regional High School, carved ceramic vase. Bianca Mazurkowski, Wachusett Regional High School, portrait. Dahlia Vargas, Wachusett Regional High School, charcoal drawing. And Allison DeLeer, Wachusett Regional High School, painting, girl in a pink dress. The MWCC Art Club also selected Alezo and Jenko for its special Art Club Award. The college extended its appreciation to Crystal Voorhees, administrative assistant, and Kevin Oxford, gallery assistant, an MWCC alum, for their contributions to organizing and installing this exhibition. The quality of work in this year's show was exceptional, Miller said, according to the announcement. We are continually inspired by what students and educators accomplish, often with limited resources. We hope this experience encourages students to continue pursuing their artistic passions. This story was created by Kimberly Green with the assistance of artificial intelligence. Journalists were involved in every step of the information gathering, reviewing, editing, and publishing process. Our next story focuses on Templeton, with an article by Stephen Landry of the Gardner News. Templeton's Baldwinville School Apartments lottery opens. The lottery is accepting applications. Nearly a year after ground was broken on the Baldwinville School Apartments redevelopment project in Templeton, the lottery for applications to live in the first multifamily housing projects built in the town in the last 25 years is accepting applications. The redevelopment of the historic Baldwinville Elementary School will create 54 rental units across two connected three-story buildings, with 49 designated as affordable for households earning 30% to 60% of the area median income. The project, which was designed by Icon Architecture, will include apartments in a range of layouts, including loft, studio, one-bedroom, two-bedroom, and three-bedroom, many of which are being rehabilitated in the original elementary school. I'm thrilled to see this project come into completion, said Town Administrator James Ryan. 70% of its unrestricted affordable units are reserved for Templeton residents, individuals who work in Templeton, or for parents whose children attend school in the district. Apartments to feature outdoor courtyard, playground, and walking trail. Additional on-site amenities include an outdoor courtyard, public children's playground, fitness center, EV charging stations, in-building laundry, and a public walking trail to an overlook of the Otter River. Additionally, the MART, M-A-R-T, Winchendon Link bus stop is a block away and provides several 10-minute trips to and from Gardner. Whether someone is looking to downsize and save, find a place of their own for the first time, or move closer to where their children are being educated, Templeton will soon have dozens of new apartments to meet those needs, Ryan said. What to know about the lottery? Applications for the housing lottery are being submitted online or postmarked no later than July 15, 2026. All applicants who submit a complete application by the deadline will be entered into the lottery drawing, which will take place on July 22, 2026 at 4 p.m. via Zoom. Officials with Peabody Properties will contact and process applicants in lottery number order following the lottery. Prospective residents are encouraged to attend an upcoming information session at the Narragansett Regional School at 462 Baldwinville Road on Thursday, May 14th at 5 p.m. As the housing lottery opens, Baldwinville School Apartments marks an important step in bringing new housing opportunities to Templeton, said Melissa Fish Crane of Peabody Properties. Our team looks forward to guiding applicants through the process and ultimately welcoming residents into a well-managed, supportive community then they can call home. The session will provide an overview of the community, available units, income qualifications, and application process. An ice cream truck will be on site to provide treats to all attendees. For more information, see Baldwinville School Apartments online as a link, or contact Peabody Properties at 857-281-1494. Again, that's Peabody Properties at 857-281-1494. Or look for Baldwinville at peabodyproperties.com. So that's BALDWINVILLE at PEABODY Properties, all one word, peabodyproperties.com. Our next story has a gardener focus, and it's by Stephen Landry of the Gardener News. Gardener City Clerk T.D. Serafin to step away from position. A familiar face is leaving City Hall in Gardner. T.D. Serafin, who has worked the past 5 years as the city clerk, has announced that she will be leaving her position effective July 2nd for personal reasons, primarily related to child care. Since giving birth to my son in 2024 and returning to work, balancing child care has been a challenge, said Serafin, who began her career in City Hall in 2010, working as an admin in the clerk's office, before being appointed assistant clerk later that year. Daycare is expensive, and I do not have family nearby to assist. I would like to spend more time with my family. Serafin said she will be moving out of state to be closer to her family. At this stage in my life, with both a toddler and an adult daughter, I am ready for the next chapter, and I am unable to dedicate the same level of time to the city clerk's role as I once did. Serafin appointed Gardner City Clerk in January 2021. In 2018, Serafin accepted a position as assistant clerk in Leominster. When former Gardner City Clerk Alan Agnelli announced his retirement, she applied for the role and was officially appointed as Gardner City Clerk on January 5th, 2021. Serafin said the position of city clerk has grown increasingly busy as the community had grown under her tenure. There has been a rise in requests for genealogy records, birth certificates, and voter registration, she said. Additionally, changes in election laws, including early voting and new voting regulations, has added to the workload in the clerk's office. What will Serafin miss about the job? Serafin said she will miss the connections and relationships she has built over the years on the job. I have had the opportunity to meet many wonderful people and truly value those interactions, she said. I will also miss the lighter moments, like seeing residents bring in their dogs to be registered. As she prepares the area, Serafin urges residents to show some patience with the staff in the clerk's office. They are working hard to manage a significant workload with limited staffing, and some processes take time, she said. To my co-workers, I will truly miss working alongside them. I have built strong professional and personal relationships over the years that I deeply value. And even though she will no longer be in the area, Serafin would like her successor at the clerk's office to know that she will always make herself available by phone or email if she can ever be of assistance. I want to ensure a smooth transition and support their success in the role, she said. Sometimes reaching out for guidance is the quickest way to find answers. I still occasionally consult former clerk Alan Agnelli when needed. What happens next? City officials are moving quickly to fill the vacancy at City Hall. They have impaneled a special search committee to begin looking for Gardner's next city clerk. In an April 30th letter, Council President George Tyros informed Mayor Michael Nicholson and his fellow council members that City Clerk T.D. Serafin had submitted her resignation effective July 2nd, 2026. As the city clerk is a charter-appointed position reporting directly to the city council, it is imperative that we begin the process of securing a qualified successor, Tyros said. As was done during the city auditor vacancy, I am appointing a special search committee for the city clerk to oversee the recruitment, application review, and recommendations for a new city clerk. I will serve as chair of the committee, joined by Councillor Elizabeth Kaczynskis and Councillor Judy Mack. The clerk role is incredibly important to the city council and the city's operations, and knowing that we're going to have a vacancy, it's important that we move forward in an efficient and timely manner, Kaczynskis said. Tyros thanked Serafin for her time with the city at the end of the council's May 4th meeting. I think it's important for the public to know just how important Serafin's role is. It's long hours helping residents during the day. Then she comes here at night to meet with us to conduct our business and all of our subcommittee meetings, the elections, and all the census work that the office does, he said. It really is kind of the central artery of our city hall. And I think that everybody that's worked with TD appreciates all the hard work that she does, and we wish you the best in your future. That completes this segment of this evening's program, so we'll go back to Dave, who has more Gardner news, and I'll be back at the final segment of the program later in the evening. So take it away, Dave.
Thank you, Risa. Our next story, Templeton seeks volunteers to lower flags, save town money. This is written by Stephen Landry. It's never a happy occasion when the president or governor orders the flags across the state to half-staff. But now officials in Templeton are looking for a few good and patriotic volunteers to take over the somber duty of ensuring the town's flags are flying within federal and state compliance. Town Administrator James Ryan said, utilizing volunteers to lower and raise the flags in the community is a way to save money for residents. In order to raise and lower flags off hours, we've had to utilize our employees, which means paying employees overtime to come in on weekends, Ryan said. Every 3 years, we negotiate our union contracts, and the unions in Templeton are very good to work with. One of my goals for the last round of negotiations was to pull flag lowering and raising duties out of the union contract by giving the work to volunteers. The union was agreeable to the idea, according to Ryan. In the event we can't get volunteers, we will use our staff, but we will hopefully get the volunteers we need to save the town a good chunk of money, he said. Flags across the state, and of course within the town, are ordered lowered at a federal or state level much more often than the average resident might be aware. Unfortunately, we live in a world where bad things happen all too often, and we do a good job in the Commonwealth of recognizing those bad days, which often require the lowering of flags as a sign of respect or mourning, Ryan said. Flag volunteers will be assigned a member of the town's building and grounds crew, who will take them on a tour of the town, show them where all the appropriate flagpoles are, and give them a tutorial on how to properly lower and raise the flag. We'll make sure everyone is comfortable with the job before we start calling for assistance, Ryan said. What kind of resident would be best suited for this volunteer position? Veterans, said Ryan. Veterans know what it's like to serve. They know the value of the community. And no one is more patriotic than a veteran, he said. However, anyone who wants to help the town and likes being outside is going to be perfect. Knowing how many flags there are around town, Ryan said, they were hoping to get as many volunteers as possible. We don't get notice when we have to lower flags, so when it happens, he said. We'll need plenty of volunteers to call, because not everyone will be able to respond when it's time, so extra volunteers will be required. Anyone interested in volunteering or finding out more about the job is urged to contact Michelle at MVestGard, that's MVestGard, at templetonma.gov. Next, we have a feature story for you. Baldwinville family fundraises for daughter's rare Pitt-Hopkins syndrome. This is written by Amelia Cardona. Jamie Lemieux is a Baldwinville mother of seven who prays every day for a miracle that her three-year-old daughter, Avia, can learn to walk on her own. Avia has a rare genetic disease called Pitt-Hopkins syndrome that halts a child's mobility, speech, and cognitive development. Avia was diagnosed at 10.5 months old. The Lemieux family, in the past 3 years, has spent hundreds of hours and thousands of dollars to get the treatment and therapies that Avia needs, and these treatments will not stop as she grows. They actually will become more intense and more expensive. We try to give her as much additional support as possible because we noticed that her physical body is responding well to the Dynamic Movement Intervention, or DMI, therapy, but of course, only insurance can cover so much, she said. We are trying everything to make sure Avia can walk independently one day, and I do believe in miracles. The next round of DMI therapy for Avia is a 2-week program that costs $250 per day for a total of $3,750. Lemieux said this therapy will be out of the Pediatric Therapy Center in Nashua, New Hampshire, which is an hour away from their Baldwinville home. While insurance covers Avia's basic physical and cognitive therapy, any additional therapies will have to be paid out of pocket. We want her to be able to walk on her own with her walker, of course, before she starts preschool, Lemieux said. We also have to do more speech therapy and teach her how to feed herself, because right now she can communicate through a tablet that has pictures and understands a lot of things, but she still can't talk or feed herself. Currently, Avia receives physical therapy at the Pediatric Therapy Center 3 times a week, so the program will be additional therapy sessions on top of her usual. Other symptoms of Pitt-Hopkins syndrome include apnea episodes, which are when breathing completely stops during sleep, constipation, reflux, low muscle tone, and epilepsy or seizures. I was so sick during my pregnancy, the fatigue was so heavy on my body, and I didn't gain very much weight either, so I knew something was wrong, she said. The doctors had to do a C-section at 38 weeks. Avia was only 5 pounds and 3 ounces. She was born with hammer toes and had an apnea episode after she was born. Those apnea episodes look like seizures, and they keep happening so often that I had to call 911 one time. At 3 months old, I started to notice that Avia wasn't doing much movement besides moving her arms up and down a little and very rigid-like movements, which is not typical for a baby, she said. After going to doctors after doctor, I just knew something was wrong, even though tests and exams came back normal. At 5 months, I got a referral where a doctor finally said that Avia was behind in development. Lemieux and Avia's days consist of at-home visits from a physical therapist or trips to the pediatric therapy clinic in Nashua. Lemieux said Avia began speech therapy at a program at Worcester State University, where she was building the foundations to improve her verbal communication, but she will resume speech therapy at the Nashua Clinic. Doing all of these therapies is a lot of work for her. It's like if you and I go to the gym. We'll be exhausted afterward, she said. I try to get her to do as much as she can without completely exhausting her. This coming fall, Avia will start preschool, and Lemieux said there will be several challenges, as Avia does not communicate verbally, can't walk without a mobility device like a walker, and can't feed herself. Lemieux said the disease has also affected Avia's gastrointestinal tract, so she has a special diet that is gluten and dairy-free. Through the end of June, the Lemieux family is collecting gently used pairs of shoes for Fund2Orgs, an organization that buys old shoes and refurbishes them for distribution in poor and underdeveloped communities around the world. Jamie Lemieux said their goal is at least 2,500 pairs of shoes or 100 bags of shoes to raise $1,000 to partially cover the cost of an intensive 2-week physical therapy program. Right now, they have collected 43 bags of shoes, or almost 1,000 pairs. Skates are accepted, and donated shoes should not have large holes or rips. I picked this fundraiser because it helps two great causes at the same time. I'm a firm believer in helping others when they need it, she said. While we are getting the financial help we need, we are also helping people in another country. There are shoe drop-off places at Deer Creek Farm Bagels and Breads in Templeton, the Templeton Police Department, and Reno's Pizza in Templeton. On Saturday, May 30th, Jamie Lemieux said they will host a shoe collection event at the Templeton Food Pantry from 12 to 2 p.m. There's also a cash fundraiser established to help the Lemieux family at supportnow.org/avia, A-V-I-A, -S-journey. And we have this timely story. See how much home prices rose in Worcester County recently. This is from the USA Today Network. Newly released data from Realtor.com for February shows that potential buyers and sellers in Worcester County saw higher home sale prices than the previous month's median of $450,000. The median home sold for $455,000, an analysis of data from Realtor.com shows. That means February, the most recent month for which figures are available, was up 1.1% from January. Compared to February 2025, the median home sale price was down 6.2% compared to $485,000. More information on the local housing market, along with other useful community data, is available at data.thegardnernews.com. In looking at single-family homes, the $455,000 median selling price in Worcester County was down 1.3% in February from $471,000 the month prior. 23 single-family homes sold for $1 million or more during the month. For condominiums and townhouses, they increased by 3.8% in sales price during February to a median of $406,000 from $391,000 in January. Four condominiums or townhomes sold for $1 million or more during the month, compared to six recorded transactions of at least $1 million in February 2025. This is Community News from Gardner. It's a weekly production of the Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Now here's Risa Sachs with the final segment.
Thank you again, Dave. And we'll begin this last segment of this evening's program with an item about food and focused in Gardner. It's by Stephen Landry of the Gardner News. Joy Market and Bakery to bring new Latin flavors to Gardner. Things are about to get a little spicier in Union Square in Gardner. The Joy Market and Bakery, which will specialize in Latin foods and Hispanic products, is scheduled to open at 22 Union Square on Monday, May 25th. Owners Alex and Fabiola Aguilar, who live in Gardner, said they are excited to share their Latin culinary flair, or, quote, sazon, with customers in the city and neighboring towns. We moved to this beautiful city 10 years ago, and things were a bit difficult at first, said Fabiola. I could rarely find the Latin products I love using for cooking, and it was equally challenging to go out and enjoy a Latin meal, as there weren't many places here in Gardner offering a wide variety of Latin dishes. Alex said his wife had long wanted to open her own food establishment in the community that would offer the diverse flavors of Latin cuisine as well as various products imported from Central and South America. Whenever there was anything I wanted to cook or use any on my meat or my chicken or whatever we wanted to cook, we had to travel a half hour to 45 minutes to buy it, he said, adding that since the store's signs had gone up a few weeks ago, the couple, who are from Guatemala, have been hearing regularly from customers wondering when the establishment would open to the public. They're anxious to walk in here and say, "What can I have?" New establishment in familiar Gardner location. The location will be familiar to Chier City residents, as the former home of Taylor Rental, which was closed by owners Pete and Madeline Gamache in 2024, after four decades in business. Because he was friends with the Aguilars, Pete asked if the couple would like to be interested in purchasing the building for their new bakery and market. We loved it immediately, though at the same time we felt a twinge of fear, and we knew it wouldn't be easy given the significant investment and the sheer amount of work required to transform a space that currently lacked a commercial-grade kitchen, said Fabiola. Yet, thanks be to God, everything gradually fell into place. And so here we are today, embarking on a new beginning and writing a new chapter in the history of Gardner. Alex, who owns Aguilar Construction, said he had spent the past year converting the interior of the store into an establishment with a full commercial-grade kitchen and storage facility. He said the location is perfect for the new business. A lot of people drive by here every day, going to the car wash or Staples or Aubuchon, he said. You can even see it from the highway, and there's plenty of parking for customers. Joy Market and Bakery open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The eatery, which will have a dine-in section, will be open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Among the items on the menu are eggs with chorizo, palo asado, tacos dorados, Mexican tacos, quesadilla, and burritos. Come in and try a little bit of everything, Alex said. The business, which will be mostly run by family members, will have between 6 and 8 employees, he said. Well, we wish them all the luck. And happy eating. Next, keeping with the food theme, we look at farmers markets. It's a piece by Amelia Cardona of the Gardner News. Gardner area farmers markets open for the season. Dust off your tote bags and sun hats, as farmers market season is only days away. The start of spring marks the beginning of the growing season for the farmers across the Commonwealth. The spring also marks the opening days of farmers markets across the state. Many farms offer pick-your-own experiences where customers can take home fresh produce and it can be fun for the whole family. But sometimes you just want to grab some locally sourced fresh fruits and veggies without the hassle of picking them yourself. The growing season for farmers across the state has already begun, meaning they will soon have pounds of fresh produce for sale at seasonal farmers markets in and around the greater Gardner area. Most, if not all, vendors at these markets below that we're mentioning below accept SNAP and WIC benefits as payments. Okay, we'll begin with farmers markets in the Gardner area. Every Friday, starting May 8th, from 3 to 6 p.m., over 30 vendors will sell locally produced goods and fresh produce at the Westminster Farmers Market. Besides fresh produce and artisanal products, the farmers market will have live music performed by local and regional musicians and bands. The farmers market will be located on Academy Hill Road in Westminster, And the last day is Friday, October 16th. To get updates on the Westminster Farmers Market, follow their Facebook page. The City of Gardner's seasonal farmers markets have scheduled its opening day for Saturday, May 16th, from 9:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. The Gardner's Farmer Markets is located at 62 Waterford Street. This farmers market is monthly, with an event every month until November 2026. If you can't make it to the May event, the next three farmers markets are Saturday, June 20th, Saturday, July 18th, and Saturday, August 15th. To keep yourself updated on this farmer market, follow its Facebook page. Also, the Winchendon Farmers Market opens Saturday, May 16th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. This year, the Winchendon Market has a new location, the Hub at the Winchendon CAC Center, 5 Summer Drive. This market is open every Saturday starting May 16th until late October. Follow the Farmers Market Facebook page to stay updated on any changes to this season's schedule and vendors list. Farmers Markets a drive away. The Barry Farmers Market season has already started with its opening day on Saturday, May 2nd. The Barry Market will open every Saturday from May through late October, from 9 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., rain or shine, at the 78 Common Street area. This farmers market has 34 vendors, ranging from farms offering fresh produce to cottage kitchens offering homemade baked goods. On Thursday, May 14th, is the first day of the weekly farmers market in Orange. The market is every Thursday from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. The farmers market also offers a kids' corner for market dwellers who are parents of young children, with crafts, projects, and games for the kids. There will also be live music, and this year, Home Fruit Wines is a new vendor. The Leominster Farmers Market is having its last indoor market of the 2025-2026 season on Thursday, May 21st from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. in the Leominster City Hall Auditorium. The 2026 and 2027 Farmers Market season starts on Saturday, June 6th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. This Farmers Market is monthly until October. And the July market is not on Saturday, but on Sunday, July 5th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Follow the Leominster Market on Facebook to stay updated on date changes and the lists of vendors. A monthly farmers market is held at the Fitchburg Art Museum. The last farmers market day for the 2025-26 season was on Thursday, May 7th, from 3 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. Then on Thursday, June 4th, the 2026-27 Fitchburg Farmers Market season begins, and the last day of this market is Thursday, October 1st. Follow the Farmers Market Facebook page to stay updated on any changes this season to the schedule or vendors list. Finally, we'll follow up, staying with the outdoors theme, with a story by Jay Geerin of the Gardner News. Gardner Municipal Golf Course celebrates 90 years since opening. One historic golf shot, a drive from the first tee by Mayor James A. Timpany, started it all on the afternoon of May 2nd, 1936. After 2 years of construction, Gardner Municipal Golf Course officially opened for play. Mayor Timpany's southpaw swing in the formal opening ceremonies on that Saturday afternoon was described by the Gardner News at the time as lacking technical skill and smoothness, but with plenty of vim and vigor and force. Exactly 90 years later, on another Saturday, May 2nd, 2026, Gardner Mayor Michael J. Nicholson, with plenty of vigor and force, reenacted Mayor Timpany's drive as part of the festive Happy Birthday celebration in front of a large group of GMGC golfers, staff, and officials. "It was a very special day," said Mayor Nicholson, adding with a smile, "I'm a right-handed guy, So that's the only difference from Mayor Timpani. Our golf course is such a strong gem for us here in the community. Not too many cities and towns in the Commonwealth have a municipal golf course, and the 90th is a great reason to celebrate. GMGC Pro Shop manager Dan Berry served as the master of ceremonies on the first tee, noting that the morning rainy weather, almost on cue, cleared up and gave way to a little sunshine as the proceedings began. Mayor Timpani opened this place with the very first shot 90 years ago, and we felt this would be a good time, exactly 90 years later, to do the same thing, now with our current Mayor Nicholson, said Berry, whose staff helped organize the celebration, which included balloons, coffee, and donuts. Maybe we'll do this 10 years from now to celebrate our 100th, added Berry, before Mayor Nicholson smacked a very solid drive down the fairway. Certainly a good fortune sign for a bright GMGC future. In attendance from the Gardner Golf Commission were Jeff Gallant and Chair Alec Nalowitz, Paul Cormier, and Ann Twohig. What a great way to celebrate our beautiful golf course, said Gallant among the crowd gathered on the first tee before Mayor Nicholson took his shot. We have a lot to be thankful for because of the dedicated work of our maintenance and pro shop staff. Drew Nalowitz, also a city councilor and one of the top players at GMGC, said, "This place has been a big part of my life for as far back as I can remember. And it's such an exciting day to have the mayor tee off in recognition of the special birthday for our golf course." Cormier, a former pro shop assistant, trekked down the first fairway after Mayor Nicholson's tee shot and retrieved the golf ball, a special souvenir that will be remembered for many years, similar to the actual left-handed driver used by Mayor Timpani in 1936, which is kept in the Gardner Museum. "To have a nice golf course here brings people to the city," said Mayor Nicholson. "You can come here with friends, and you can also make new friends here. I've met other mayors from the state who have played our course, and they love it." A day like today marks a continuation of the spirit of the Gardner Golf Course, the same kind of spirit that began 90 years ago. Current GMGC Superintendent Bill Frank was on hand, as was former Superintendent Mike Hermanson, who traveled from his home in Saco, Maine, to join the celebration. The Golf Commission in 1972 took a chance on a 21-year-old kid right out of college, "and I stayed for 37 years," said Hermanson. "I have a lot of fond memories of the Gardner Golf Course, and we completed many projects over the years to make the course better. Happy 90th. I also had the honor and privilege of working with head pro Mike Egan for many years. I think we made a pretty good team." That completes this evening's presentation of the Gardner News. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Risa Sachs, reading This Evening with Dave Russell. Thanks for listening.
Hello once again, Audio Journal listeners. This is Bill Ruggiero with your latest weather forecast for Wednesday, May 13th, 2026. For today, we're looking at mostly cloudy skies with scattered showers this afternoon. Some may be heavy at times with patchy fog. Highs today near 58 degrees. For tonight, mostly cloudy skies with showers and thunderstorms likely. Rain may be heavy at times towards dawn. Low around 50 degrees. And the outlook for Thursday is called for mostly cloudy skies with showers and thunderstorms likely. Highs Thursday in the lower 60s. Thursday night, mostly cloudy skies with showers likely before midnight, then mostly cloudy after midnight. Low around 55 degrees, and the outlook for Friday is calm for an early morning shower, otherwise mostly sunny in the afternoon, highs Friday near 65 degrees. That, folks, is your latest weather forecast for today. This is Wednesday, May 13th, 2026. This has been Bill Ruggiero saying have a good day, everybody, and stay tuned for more programming back at our Patricia A. Fletcher Studios in Worcester, Massachusetts. Take it easy. Have a great day, everybody. Bye.